wrestling, but it's all so much more. It's the heart of the art form that we all adore. Your friendly neighborhood comic book store. Out among the stacks of new releases, browsing with your future new best friends, you're gonna find a book you'll love to pieces. The girl behind the counter recommends dollar books and shelves of graphic novels. Titles old and new, you'll find them all. With action figures, board games, toys, and models to add to your new Comic Wednesday haul. The Comic Book Store, the Comic Book Store. 'Cause that's where the books live, but it's all so much more. It's the heart of the art form that we all adore. Your friendly neighborhood comic book store.
Hey, welcome to Source Material Live. I am your host, the Mandated Reporter, and frankly, I'm mortified, Mr. Mark Rattledge. And today, being May 21st, MODOK on, or Marvel's MODOK on Hulu dropped today. We're not talking about that, but to celebrate its release, we went back into the archives, into the Marvel archives, and we took a look at a book that came out during the Secret Wars era, or as I like to refer to it, because they referred to it at the time, the pizza era. You know, they took the pizza of 616 and they took the pizza of the Ultimate Universe and dumped them on top of each other, and voila, Secret Wars. So at that point, if you remember, during the Secret Wars era, they stopped everything and just printed a whole bunch of books, and some were from Warzone, and some were from Battlezone, and some were part of the Secret Wars series proper. This is, I believe, is part of the Warzone series of books, and this is MODOK Assassin, which was written by Christopher Yost, and inker was Amilcar Pena. Covers were John Roach. Another inker was Terry Pallett. And this came out in roughly 2015. So here to discuss MODOK Assassin with me is the president and CEO of Honeysuckle Rose Creations and our expert on animation, ladies and gentlemen, Alexis Haina. How do you do, madam?
Doing good. The only problem with this book, unfortunately, is that I decided to go ahead and watch at least one episode of the new MODOK series along, before I started reading the book. And then now every time I read this, I have to imagine Patton Oswalt's voice coming out of MODOK.
I mean, that's fine. There's a lot of comic books where every time I read them, there's a particular voice that I hear and I can't hear another voice. So were you like a big Avengers, Captain America reader when you were actively reading comics? Like how much MODOK have you come across?
MODOK is actually a character I was not that familiar with. I did read a decent amount of Marvel and Captain America, but MODOK just hadn't shown up in a lot of the comics that I had been reading.
Probably my most recent familiarity with MODOK was him and the Leader teamed up in a bunch of Hulk comics that I read, most famously Hulked Out Heroes, which I loved. If I could just pick like a random thing to be adapted, I want the Hulked Out Hero storyline where MODOK and Leader turned everybody into Hulks, which is fantastic. But
Yo agrees with you.
But yeah, I just over the years of reading Avengers comics and Captain America, I've run into MODOK a few times. I would never have thought he would have caught on so much as to have his own book, but I guess that's kind of comics now, where everyone, they mine the entire field of characters, and if there's even some remote popularity, like, yeah, give them their own five-issue story, it's fine. My other question to you is, did you read the Secret Wars series from 2015?
No, I did not.
Are you familiar with it at all? Do you know what I was talking about?
Of course.
Okay. So, I remember from that era, I was reading the Planet Hulk series. I was reading, Maestro. his series, like anything having to do with the Hulk and his particular worlds amongst the Secret Wars books I was reading. I picked up one issue where General Ross was War Machine, and I picked up A-Force. Did you read any of the sort of ancillary books from the Secret War series?
No, I didn't.
No? Just didn't capture your attention? Or you just weren't reading contemporaneous books at the time?
I just wasn't reading extemporaneous books at the time. You gotta remember, I didn't get into reading comics until much later in my life. Actually, it's kind of funny. Somebody posted a picture on Facebook the other day of a book from the 90s. I don't remember who it was, but it was just a splash page, and much like so many books from the 90s, it looked like the inker had a freaking spasm attack, and it just dumped the entire bottle all over the page. And I remember looking at that, and I just sort of had this flashback of trying to read comics when I was younger, with so many of them looking like that, with all that ink and all that blacked outness. And I remember that something about it just was very hard to focus on, and it kind of gave me a headache. So okay. It just like, you know, that page, it's like, and here comes the migraine coming back to me. And it's like, oh, this is why I didn't read comics growing up, because a lot of the comics I was exposed to in the 90s sucked.
Yeah, you should go on Unspoken Issues and have that conversation with Jesse and Dean Compton or Chris Armstrong.
Yeah.
All right, so let's get into this MODOK Assassin book. So if you remember going back to Secret Wars, God Emperor Doom had recreated the universe and basically had sectioned off portions of the planet. And, like, this portion was Marvel Zombies, and this portion was House of M, and this portion was Marvel 2099, and this portion was Marvel 1302. And the area that we're dealing with in MODOK Assassin is Killville, which is run by the Kingpin. Who was the other character? There were three of them. Kingpin, I think Viper was one of them. And Trout, yeah. And God Emperor Doom, the sheriff of this Secret Wars world, is Doctor Strange, and he is accompanied by Sue Storm and Valeria Storm, her daughter. And we don't need to get into Secret Wars. You just needed some background so you understand the setting of this thing. So MODOK lives in Killville, which is pretty much, you know, like I said, run by the Kingpin, Shroud, and Viper. And it's just criminals doing criminal stuff, and MODOK is out there doing his thing. So the summary reads, in a world populated by the most fearsome thieves, murderers, and ne'er-do-wells, there is one who is a head above the rest. Enter MODOK, the mental organism designed only for killing, which he will remind you of on every page of this book. Killville's very own Merc with a maw is open for business, but his next job may be biting off more than he can chew. So the book opens with Bullseye trying to kill Dr. Octopus, and oh, the other detail I should mention is that the enforcers, so the policemen of the Secret Wars world, are an army of Thors, which is important because one of them is going to be is a main character in this book. So anyway, we have MODOK running afoul of Bullseye, and they get into a fight. And the way MODOK is presented, he's very high on himself. I got to ask you about that. You know, everybody is so much dumber than he is. But here's the thing. They wrote him where, like, half of what he's doing and thinking is very computerized, and then he would occasionally crack wise. What did you think about that?
It was pretty funny. It's interesting the way that they wrote his dialogue, because every now and then there's a word that is, I don't want to say hyphenated, but it's bolded. Mm-hmm. And it just always, in my head, I just always had this image or this idea that he would say, it'd be that when those words came up, he would basically say them more robotic. So it's like, you'll miss it again, once more making your claims of never missing increasingly stupid, like that.
Yeah, like he's an old, like, Matrix dot printer or something, where, like, all of a sudden, like, will change the cadence or the tone of his voice, and you're right, it becomes more computerized, and it seems to happen very randomly.
Yeah. Remind me of that episode of Futurama when Fry gets the Lucy Lou bot, and every time that it's like, You're so awesome, Philip J. Fry.
Yeah. So the monarch, so the other person who he runs afoul of is Baron Mordo and Clea. They are also in some form of leadership here in Killville. And Clea wants to just murder MODOK because he's the Hunchback of Notre Dame. He's just gross and ugly and a monster, and nothing unpretty should be allowed to live, according to Clea. But Baron Mordo finds MODOK to be a useful idiot, and so he keeps him around.
How disturbing is that image whenever MODOK makes the people's heads explode? I mean, you get the shot of Dr. Octavius and his head just going poof, but there's no blood, but it basically looks like the psychic energy is exploding out of his head, and it's kind of gruesome.
Yeah, I mean, it's something where I think if they ever did it like live action or whatever, you know, it would be like The Boys. You know, The Boys are really into heads exploding, especially season two. I don't know if you've watched it, but but it's kind of like that. You know what I mean? Only instead, you have Psylocke's purple energy coming out of them.
Yeah, I can just imagine some meeting between the CGI artists and the studio executives, and they're like, "Well, we can do this," and the studio execs are going, "No, we still need you to tone it down. You know, it's like make it a little less gory."
In terms of art, I have to ask, one thing I did notice here as I'm kind of flipping through pages of issue number one, boy, is this artist in love, and it may just be an aesthetic thing because we're dealing with MODOK, but boy, are they in love with pinks and purples in this book.
Not totally against it. They are clearly in love with that, but frankly, you see a lot of that in various Marvel books. I mean, how Gambit shows up earlier or later in the book, and anytime Gambit shows up, you're going to see an onslaught of pink in any book he's in.
Yeah.
I love the lighting effects in this. I mean, you get the scene where Baron Mordo and Clea show up, and he's guided by, it looks like he's just kind of like, you know, flying with lightning coming around him or something. It's a little hard to tell, but it is gorgeous looking, the way the lighting is just kind of glowing around him and Clea.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whoever did the lighting effects for this book, bravo.
So one of the things they point out is that Killville is smack in the between the House of M land. It's just kind of like Disney. To your right is Frontierland. To your left is House of M. So, and they're very much into nobody is allowed to cross borders. So whatever you're bordered with, whether it's Marvel Zombies or A-Force or House of M, everybody has to stay within their own zone, and that's what the Thors are there to enforce, and that's what Dr. Strange is kind of overlooking in all of this, is everyone stay in the land that God Doom created for you. And I always thought that was very interesting about the Secret Wars series, was that everyone was very aware of God Doom. You know, he was not just sitting from afar having achieved his ultimate goals. He very much, you know, he recreated the world the way that he did, and everyone knows it, and everyone knows just how much power he has, and everyone's like, okay, like, just tell us what the rules are, God Doom, because we don't want to run afoul of you. And that is very present in this book.
Not to mention paying attention to the dialogue, it kind of comes back to when we were talking about the first season of Chilling Adventures of Sabrina, and you were talking about how it kind of caught you off guard every time they, instead of saying, you know, it's like, oh God, they said, oh Satan. Well, mm-hmm. Here they say, oh Doom.
Yeah. Which I found amusing. And so MODOK don't cotton to no boundaries, so he crosses right into the House of M world and starts messing with the Sentinels. And this is where the plot thickens, because while he's having fun with Sentinels, blowing them up and whatnot, one of the Thors falls out of the sky, and it's, I believe her name is actually Angela in the comics proper.
She says at the end her name is Angela, but when I pulled up the Marvel fandom website, it identified her as Ardriff, some weird Nordic name that I cannot pronounce to save my life.
I've always known her as Angela. I'm actually gonna look her up. Angela Marvel. Funny. The first thing I did was type Angela, and this, and the first thing Google gave me was Angela and MODOK.
Of course.
Okay, so Angela in the comics. Angela's a fictional superhero created by Neil Gaiman and artist Todd McFarlane. She first appeared as the antagonist in McFarlane's created own Spawn.
It's the chick who in the movie looked like she was dressed as the Green Power Ranger.
She is an angel and bounty hunter working under the auspices of heaven to oppose Spawn. Angela was later the subject of a legal battle between McFarlane and Gaiman over the rights to the character, which Gaiman won. Gaiman later sold the rights to the characters of, to Marvel. She was integrated into the Marvel Universe in the story in the 2013 story Age of Ultron, and her character was expanded upon in Original Sin, where she was established to be the lost sister of Thor. Her alter ego is Eldriff Odin, Odin's daughter. Odin's daughter, get it? Odin's daughter? Daughter? Yep. Daughter? Get it?
I stand by what I said. There's retcons and then there's that.
So, yes, and I think she's, I want to say she was on at least one team, where she was part of, like, the Asgardians of the Galaxy, if I remember correctly. I don't know if you're familiar with that book at all.
You think she'll show up in the next Thor movie?
She might, Rabbit. She might show up there. She might show up in Guardians of the Galaxy. She might, Rabbit. She might. Alternate version. 1602, Witch Hunter, Angela. Angela appears as the hunter of witch breed mutants in the 1602 universe. In MODOK Assassin, she's a member of the Thors. And a third appears as a resident of the domain Arcadia, home of all women superhero team A-Force. All right, so there you go. So that's Angela in a nutshell. So here she's one of the Thors, and she drops out of the sky like women often do. She makes a big crater impact. And like, I get that this is kind of a fun, you know, Beauty and the Beast love story. I just wish MODOK were a little bit less simple. You know, here he is, kind of like Marvin the Paranoid Android. Is Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. Is it Marvin who's the android?
Yeah.
Okay. Marvin the Paranoid Android, brain the size of a planet, and they use me as a calculator. Kind of the same thing here with MODOK. You know, he's so smart. He's such a genius. He has all of these plans upon plans upon plans. Sees a pretty girl and goes, I'm in love. I'm like, come on, man. That's it? That's all it took? Pretty girl? Falling out of the sky?
Yeah. I will add one of the things. It's a minor thing, but I'm reading this book on Kindle from Mac, and it drives me nuts when they have the little subtitles at the top that say, it's like, oh, this happened 2 hours ago, this happened 8 hours ago, this happened 8 days ago. Because, unfortunately, Kindle from Mac doesn't have a zoom-in function, so little things like that are kind of hard to read. Actually, I'm not going to lie, a lot of MODOK's dialogue, the font that they chose, the font is not that easily readable.
Yeah, one of the commenters I saw in this book was like, why are we doing pink white on pink? This is not easy to read, Marvel. You're killing me.
Yeah, at least, and again, because they do... Marvel has done the same we've seen a couple of times where they choose slightly different fonts for different characters. Mm-hmm. Not a bad idea. You get a better idea of who's talking, and I think it adds... I mean, you know, it's like a bit of an inflection in the Thor in Angela's speak. It's much more rounded, and it kind of has like a almost a Renaissance feel to the font. So it makes sense, and you get more of an idea of how she would be speaking. But yeah, MODOK's font in white on paint. For example, there are multiple times when he said, just says, kill. That font in white on pink, I swear to God, the K looks like an M. So multiple times I was like, why is he saying mill?
Must make bread.
Exactly.
All right, so this last bit of dialogue here. Science does not allow for the existence of heaven or hell, only doom. So this is neither demon nor angel. A Thor has just fallen at my feet. Kill, kill, kill. I have always wanted to kill a Thor. She is really quite lovely. Ugh.
Who would have thought MODOK's got a thing for redheads?
I mean, you know, much like women throwing swords at you from bodies of water is no basis for a system of government. Can't there have been a little bit more here than redheaded dames falling out of the sky in metal bikini tops being a little bit more, I don't know. Maybe I'm too feminist, but I just, like, come on, man.
I do love her repeated jokes when he points out that she's got these weird ribbon things around her neck, and it's just like, those ribbon things, I have no idea what they're for, but I'm sure they're useful in killing.
Yeah.
MODOK. Sometimes if you looked at a character's costume in a comic book, and you go, why do you have that? I mean, I'm sure it looks cool and it's fun to draw, but seriously, what is the point?
Have you ever seen the list? Somebody came up with a list, and I can't remember what side it's on. I'm sure if I looked hard enough, I could find it again. But I remember seeing a list of the most ridiculous costumes for women in combat. And, you know, and of course, you know, as the list goes on, the outfits get skimpier and skimpier to the point where boobs are being held up by, you know, the naughtiest bit of ribbon. And it's like, come on, no one's going into battle like this. You might as well be a topless showgirl. I just watched Army of the Dead. Anyway.
I remember on Atop the Fourth Wall, they were discussing the concept of the single shoulder pad, which showed up so frequently in the 90s. And apparently people had been writing and going, no, the single shoulder pad actually has use. Because, yeah, if you're holding a heavy weapon with the other arm that is not shoulder pad, it makes sense not to have the shoulder pad on there. And he said, okay, that's fine. But here's the problem. This keeps showing up on somebody, especially women, and the single shoulder pad is literally the only armor they have.
Yep.
They're wearing a single shoulder pad and a bikini.
I don't know if you know this or not, but a lot of horny men seem to be drawing comic books for other horny boys. I don't know if that's occurred to you or not, but it definitely has occurred to me.
Oh, my God, are you serious? All this time, I had no idea. Gail, you lied to me.
Yeah, didn't you know this was sort of a male-for-male medium? I don't know if you knew that or not. Have you heard of Grammarly? No, we're not ready for that yet.
Nice try.
All right. Issue number 2, August 20 of 2015. When a Thor crash lands in Killville, the mental organism only designed for killing sets out to do what he does best. But little does MODOK suspect he may be in over his head. And so we flash back to 2 hours prior to her dropping out of the sky in the Monarch Year of M, and she is doing battle and saying, have at thee like Thors do. And we get a little glimpse into the House of M empire here. And then we flash back to Killville, and she wakes up and she sees MODOK and reacts the way you would when coming across MODOK. Die, foul monster! And so they start to fight here, and she tries to call to her hammer, who is Devil Slayer, but the hammer won't come, and so that's the first problem she's got.
Yeah, hammer is kind of surrounded in an orb of someone else's magic. I just love, she's slicing at him, and he's trying to get her to calm down. It's like, perhaps we should talk about this, perhaps over a nice chamomile tea.
There is I want to say it's, I can't remember the name of the comedian now. He used to do I don't remember which comedian it is, but he was talking about, like, guys picking up women in a bar, and, like, they could splash acid in your face, and the guy would keep going, come on, just one drink.
Yeah, that's pretty much.
It's very much MODOK here. We cut away to the Killville Police Headquarters, and this is where we see the triad of the Assassin's Guild. So Baron Mordo actually runs Killville. But the people who run the Assassin's Guild, who are the big power in Killville, are Shroud, Viper, and Kingpin. And so they're not thrilled that their best assassin, Bullseye, who never misses but missed, was killed by MODOK. And they're just waiting for the go-ahead, because apparently, you know, they don't want to cross Baron Mordo, but as soon as Baron Mordo gives them the go-ahead to take out MODOK, they're like, yeah, it's on like Donkey Kong.
You know, it's so funny. I gotta just ask this whole thing about Bullseye not missing. I know we all agree that the Ben Affleck Daredevil film had serious problems, but can we just all just come into unison that the scene when Bullseye misses Daredevil the first time, and Colin Farrell just goes, "I missed. I never miss," was freaking awesome.
I liked Colin Farrell in Daredevil. Look, I know I did an entire on trial on Daredevil, and yeah, it has its problems, but it is not the worst thing ever captured on celluloid the way it's made out to be. And I find that with a lot of movies where everyone just hates it. Like, it always comes down to, this isn't the movie I wanted it to be, and therefore it's bad. But it, you know, when you look at it critically and you sort of divorce yourself from preconceived notions, none of these are perfect, but they're not all, you know, horrible either.
Yeah, Colin Farrell was that movie's saving grace. What was the line that I heard from another reviewer?
It wasn't dance fighting between Ben Affleck and Jennifer Garner.
I'm sorry, but I'm in the firm belief that Jennifer Garner being hired was a studio decision because she was actually the worst thing in that film.
I will never forget them dance fighting in the park. That is hilarious to me.
Yeah, but no, there was a line a reviewer said about Colin Farrell's Bullseye. Oh, yeah. If Nicolas Cage was a drug, I swear he just snorted some. Just like that is like what, that is the most accurate description of his portrayal I've ever heard.
So Angela is still fighting with MODOK, and MODOK is so MODOK's thinking about things as he's fighting with her, and you know he has lines like, she says. Nay, there is a deep-rooted desire for spinning your giant freakish splitting your giant freakish head like a melon. You think we have not heard of you, murderer, MODOK assassin? And his takeaway from that: she has heard of me. Fantastic.
That was great.
They really did take the menace of MODOK and reduce him to horny guy at the bar. It's pretty hilarious. Considering what he looks like, that actually strikes me as kind of comedic.
And again, just listening to these lines and thinking of Patton Oswalt saying them. Patton Oswalt saying, "What if I told you there has been some kind of terrible yet potentially charming misunderstanding here?"
So this goes on and on. They fight for a few more pages here. She nearly hits him with the axe.
Nearly hits him with the freaking chainsaw.
Yeah. And she says,
MODOK has a chainsaw.
This ends now, you wretched, wretched. It is my duty. You are a monster, an assassin. You attacked me. And then he's on his back like a turtle and can't move. And he says, but as I prepare to die, the greatest killer this world has ever known, prepare to be killed. Even now, I can't be mad at her because pretty girl. And so she comes down with the axe, and she misses. And MODOK's like, you missed. Incorrect. You did not. You spared me. And Angela, coming to her senses, says, you risked your own life to save me. Why would you do this? And MODOK says, it's complicated, as it always is. But I did not attack you. No, I sense the truth in your words. But if not, then who? Who would dare attack Thor? And so our mystery is laid out before us. How did this Thor come to be attacked and fall out of the sky? Meanwhile, the word is given, and all your favorite Marvel killing assassin type folks are tapped to go kill MODOK by the Kingpin. And we've got a page here of Scarlet Spider, Black Widow, Boomerang, Wolverine, Taskmaster, Ghost, Hitmonkey, who's getting his own Marvel TV show, Elektra, the Punisher,
Sabretooth, Jack-o'-lantern, Screaming Mimi, Typhoid Mary, Ghost.
Yeah. All right, and so that brings us to issue number 3. Anything on issue number 2 before I go on? I want to make sure I got your thoughts in there.
Tell me I'm not the only one that didn't recognize half of those assassins.
Yeah, they were pretty familiar. All right, issue number 3, which came out in September of 2015, The Impossible Has Happened. The mental organ... MODOK has fallen head over heels in love. But with love in his life caught in the crosshairs of Killville's most ruthless mercenaries, can MODOK hope to stay one step ahead of his rivals and live long enough to find out who set her up? And there's a note here that says, this issue takes place before Secret Wars number 4. If that matters to anyone. All right, so we open up here, and Angela and MODOK are in his little town car thing, and they are beset on all sides by all manner of assassins from the previous issue.
Stand by what I said before we started recording. I am going to find a way to include the phrase self-edit into my vocabulary if it's the last thing I do.
There you go.
I have run many simulations and have attained a 63.76 kill rate against multiple Thor. Self-edit! Self-edit! Multiple what? It doesn't matter.
So the first couple of pages of this is them just fighting off all these various assassins, and you know don't Angela and MODOK make a cute killing couple?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
We flash over to Doomguard, and Beta Ray Bill's like, hey, Sheriff Strange, we can't find Thor. Not only can't we find Thor, but all of our devices used to keep track of Thor's, can't seem to find her, and this is a problem. And Strange says, it might be rabbits, it might. And then we're back into the fight again, and there's just more fighting. A lot of action in this comic. I mean, you know, we talked kind of before the show started. It's a very simple read. It's a fun read, but it's definitely one of those, like, very comic booky stories.
You have a scene of Angela basically taking down Jack-O-Lantern, screaming, I speak of your death, vegetable-faced villain. I actually didn't know who Jack-O-Lantern was.
Yeah, I thought that was like, I, for some odd reason, I don't know why I thought this, I thought it was like Hobgoblin or somebody.
Well, because when his weapon of choice is throwing a mechanical pumpkin grenade, and we all know who throws those most commonly. And yeah, I thought the same thing. I was like, oh, is this a new version of Hobgoblin? No, Jack-O-Lantern. I had no idea who Jack-O-Lantern is. I never heard of Screaming Mimi.
I've heard of her. I mean, yeah, she's in someone's rogues gallery. I'll be damned if I know who it is, but I've heard of her before. I didn't know who Hitmonkey was until I started doing research for his upcoming show, which is the only show left of the Offenders that's still coming to Marvel. And he apparently showed up in a Deadpool comic once upon a time and then had his own series.
Well, yeah, of course, because who else better to square off with an assassin monkey?
Anyway, so lots more killing getting involved here. And then, now, these are the Faceless Ones, is that what they're called, that attack?
Yeah, they actually made a brief appearance in the first Doctor Strange film at the end when, what's the name of the bad guy in that film?
Cassilius.
Cassilius, yeah. When Cassilius and the few followers who remain are swept up to become part of the One, you see them actually become the Faceless, the Mindless. Yeah, it was actually a very nice little touch.
All right, so then they attack, and that is the end of issue number 3. So what did you think of issue number 3?
I am so grateful that the artists and writers actually included little captions of who each character was in this, because, again, I was not familiar with a couple of the assassins, and even a few of them I kept getting mixed up with, wait, who is that? For example, we see Sabretooth, and I know Sabretooth, and I like Sabretooth, but the way Sabretooth is drawn, I didn't recognize him.
So far it's been pretty straightforward, but what we're going to find out is that her falling out of the sky was part of a bigger plot, and as the book goes forward, they will explain what that plot is. But I'll tell you, I think it could have been a little bit cleaner and a little bit more interesting had it been written a little bit better. And a tool they could have used to write it better, I've decided, is Grammarly. I don't know if you know about that, but if you're sitting there and you're writing a screenplay for a comic or a movie or a television show, and you start to write things that are a little hard to understand, the AI will push you in the pool and just take over and write it for you so that it's clear to the audience. I don't know if you know that or not.
Oh, gee, do go on.
Grammarly's AI-powered products help people communicate more effectively. Grammarly helps you write mistake-free on Gmail, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, and nearly everywhere else you write on the web. Grammarly corrects hundreds of grammar, punctuation, and spelling mistakes while also catching contextual errors, improving your vocabulary, and suggesting style improvements, and it'll write a better Secret Wars comic for you. To download Grammarly today, go to getgrammarly.com/W2M Network. Again, that's getgrammarly.com/W2M Network to download Grammarly for free. Truth in advertising. That's what I stand for here on the Radulage and Broadcasting Network.
Glad you don't stand for paying your employees.
Oh, my God. You know, Chris Bailey, I told him, I was like, I wish I could pay people so I wouldn't have to hear comments like that. And he was like, no one should want to be paid by you. This is what Chris Bailey tells me. He says, no one should want to be paid by you. We all enjoy hanging out and talking. Why would you pay people who are your friends? You're my friend, Alexis Haina. We're here having friendly conversation about a comic book we love. You don't pay people for that. Can you hear me blinking?
Yeah. Oh, it's so true. That it's so wonderful getting to talk comics and movies and stuff with friends. But you know what else is wonderful? Keeping my lights on.
just think of the untold riches coming your way from the people who hear this podcast and then hear about your company and want to buy said jewelry. Look at the fashion model pictures I sent you of my daughter wearing your lovely Demon Slayer Nezuko head barrettes.
Hair barrette, head barrette.
I'm not a girl. I don't know this stuff.
Head barrette sounds like a saw trap.
Moving on. Issue number 4. Entangled in a plot that extends far beyond the borders of Killville, can MODOK hope to save the life of Thor, of the Thor he loves, and ensure the continued existence of his murder paradise? All right. So
what do you think about the idea of Doom finally taking over the world?
I mean, it was bound to happen at some point. I mean, Marvel's been in existence for, 100 years now? You know, occasionally letting Doom win one isn't the worst thing ever. I mean, I remember I read the Secret Wars series when it came out. I was reading it issue by issue. And I know Jesse talked about it on Source Material at some point or other. And it was a little convoluted, the story. I didn't all the way love it. But the idea of it, you know, if Marvel... Look, DC reboots their universe every 5 years or something like that, right? DC's gone through a handful of reboots. But mm-hmm. Marvel had pretty much had the same continuity going all the way back to its early days and rebooted once. And so I guess, you know, if they're sitting there like, hey, we want to reboot this universe, we want to merge the Ultimate Universe with the 616, and going forward we want to have a more representative, inclusive cast, you know, of characters, and, you know, we need to just sort of clean up some continuity issues from the last 100 years of doing this. I don't think there's a better character, if you're going to tell that story, than to do it with Doctor Doom, other than maybe the Beyonder.
See, a couple of years ago, I walked into a convention to go set up my table, and a gentleman came up to me, handed me a flyer, and asked if I had a moment to talk about our Lord and Savior, Doctor Doom.
That's amazing.
Yeah, but then I threw him a curveball saying, no, do you have a minute to talk about our Lord and Savior, Hal Jordan? He died for our sins. And next thing I know, I'm 10 minutes late to set up my table because this guy and I can't finish discussing who's a better god to bow down to.
I'll get you caught up in a nerd conversation. And as funny as that story is, I really hate those kinds of conversations. I mean, granted, I'm the chain of custody shield guy. But still, there are, like, so, you know, on your suggestion and, you know, and just sort of knowing, you know, it's a good idea, I joined a whole bunch of Facebook groups. And even before that, I had just wanting to be part of a larger boxing conversation, I had joined a whole bunch of boxing Facebook groups. And so much of it is, do you think Batman could beat Superman? Even in the boxing groups, only change out Batman with Muhammad Ali. You know, it's always these, like, fantasy matchup kind of things. And I'm like, I can't think of a more boring conversation than mindlessly contemplating which character could do what in what sort of fantastic situation. It's like, oh, God, I can't even.
See, I love the show Death Battle, and I love watching that. That's kind of fun.
Mm-hmm.
But then it also gets annoying when somebody asks a question. I say, oh, check out this episode of Death Battle. I answer that, and someone says, that doesn't count. They got that information wrong. I'm like, oh, Lord.
When I was years ago, when I lived in Los Angeles and I was trying to become a screenwriter, I had these two friends that I had met being a Hollywood extra on a set that I was on. And the big common thread was we were all wrestling fans. And they came over to my house to watch Halloween Havoc, the year that DDP and Goldberg wrestled for the title, and Hogan took on the Ultimate Warrior in that rematch. And we're talking about the Goldberg-DDP match. And, you know, my one friend says, Goldberg has to win. They can't end the streak. You know, just storyline-wise, it makes more sense for Goldberg to win. And I had an argument as to, you know, in storyline, totally non-kayfabe, why so-and-so should win. I don't remember what I said. I probably was rooting for Goldberg. But I may, just to be contrarian, might have been arguing for DDP. And the third guy goes, I don't know, man. DDP can hit you with that diamond cutter from anywhere. And we kind of took a breath and looked at him. We're like, wait, what? He was like, yeah, DDP, man. That's the whole thing about that diamond cutter, is you never know where it's going to come from. And we had this sudden realization that it's still real to that guy. We're like, oh, God, you know. And then he starts going into this long argument about how DDP can beat Goldberg, you know, because you never know where the diamond cutter is coming from. And I'm like, I don't want to be in this house right now, and I live here. So,
you ever want to have some real fun, go to a convention, stand on a chair, and loudly proclaim, Goku lost to Superman, fair and square, and just watch the anime fans start to freak.
Is everyone just having a meltdown?
They've proven it twice on Death Battle, and yet the anime fans still refuse to believe that Goku would lose to Superman.
There are many people who need to go for a nice long walk and get some fresh air. Issue number 4.
There are many people who just need to get laid.
Like, yes.
Like, turn off the computer, turn off the TV, and go sleep with something.
Your mom's fur coat, a fresh fruit, a willing partner, anything. Just jam it into something.
Actually, yes.
Part of that I ripped off of Andrew Dice Clay. I fucked everything in the house. My mother's fur coat. Never mind. Killville, 8 years ago. God Emperor Doom surveying his kingdoms. Valeria says to him, Killville, I thought that was a typo. And so they are all kneeling before God Emperor Doom, and Baron Mordo says, silence, Clea, there are larger things at play here. God Doom will see he needs me, and that I, Baron Mordo, am the greatest sorcerer Battle World has ever known, and Dr. Strange says, distasteful. It is what it is, Valeria. A land of killers. It's an abomination. And God Doom pats him on the head and says, you are my most trusted advisor, Stephen, but in this we disagree. All things have their use, even such creatures as these. And then Valeria says, what the heck is a MODOK?
And of course, we see Baron Mordo getting jealous again, because the comics seem to forget that the comics seem to remember that the only characteristic this guy has is that he's jealous of Stephen Strange.
Yep, which we should get more of in the next movie with him and Mordo, since they set that up. But God only knows what they're going to do in that movie. It seems
I'm not going to lie. I'm glad they fleshed out his character a little bit more. And instead, I mean, I was really worried, because when you get that actor, who is an amazing guy, and it's like, please don't tell me he's just going to be throwing a temper tantrum going, I want to be a Sorcerer Supreme!
Well, that is a big motivator for him in this book, as we're going to come to find out. But back to MODOK. So they're fighting the Mindless Ones, and Shroud and Viper show up, and MODOK kills them pretty easily. Like, that power seems to work when it's convenient, and no other time, by the way, his head explosion power.
Yeah, I do kind of love when he kills them, and they're just like, you know, he was providing cover for us. Is there a reason that you decided to kill him?
We switch back to Castle Doom, and suddenly Doctor Strange is able to find Angela. And he was like, huh, you have my interest. So we flash back, and then the Taskmaster shows up with Hawkeye's bow and Captain America's shield, because of course he does. And this is great. This is kind of like my favorite part of this entire book. So the Taskmaster shows up, and in the next panel, you fucking moronic imbecile, grinning buffoon, I was in the middle of something. And the Taskmaster's like, wait, what? And Angela goes, do you know this warrior? Warrior? Taskmaster is merely an ability thief using the weapons of heroes I killed. You dare to interrupt me? I'm sorry. I was just trying to kill you.
I know. I just love this. Like, Taskmaster's ability is that he can basically copy anyone's abilities and talents. He is always able to predict everything. And this is clearly the first time, other than whenever he fights Deadpool, of course, that he has no idea what's about to happen, and it's just totally caught him off guard. Like, of all the things that I was preparing to deal with MODOK, this ain't one of them.
So MODOK says, whatever. Now, where was I? The energy sphere over your hammer, the bolt that that took you down. Taskmaster's like, what the fuck, man? Maybe you didn't hear me. I'm going to kill. And Angela's like, be silent, mortal. MODOK is thinking. And so MODOK figures out it was Baron Mordo all along. He was the author of all your pain. And now he's talking to Angela, and Taskmaster's like, pay attention to me.
It's literally ignoring. He's like, all right, that's it. You're dead. And she freaking just catches his arrow out of midair, and he's like, wait, what?
And then he's killed by the mindless ones. And so they figured out what's going on with the hammer. She just sticks her hand in the force field, and she's able to grab it. Meanwhile, the mindless ones have overtaken MODOK, and he is on his ass and almost dead. But Angela is able to grab the hammer, and she saves MODOK, but she gets knocked unconscious as she does. So, this gets a little pervy here. Even in an unconscious and or potential coma, she is truly beautiful. Hey, hey, hey. They tried to cancel Snow White ride for shit like that. No perving on an unconscious girl there, MODOK.
Yeah, but I love this. Thor, it would be convenient if you were to wake up now and save our lives. Again, this has got some really, really good tongue-in-cheek humor.
Yeah.
And I love that.
Yeah, it's an amusing read. I think my online review of it was like, some you know, books like Jupiter's Legacy give you a lot of grist for the mill to talk about and discuss and are really, you know, food for thought. And then and some books are Death of Hawkman, where it's just a fun adventure story, and other than sort of, you know, kind of talking about little details of the book, there's no big thematic thing to discuss. There's no, you know, nothing that speaks to the human condition. This is just a fun romp with two really unlikely, you know, Beauty and the Beast type characters. Anyway, MODOK tries to pick up the hammer, and hey, he's not worthy. Go figure.
That was hilarious. It's like, it's just like, it's, it looks like it's prepping itself for an 80s style revelation. It's like, I can do this. I can do this. I am worthy. I am. Okay, that was a bad idea.
Which brings us to issue number 5 and Baron Mordo saying, it was me, Austin. It was me all along. The Merc with a Mind's first solo series comes to a head. Ugh. With the life of the woman who's stolen his heart hanging in the balance, the mental organism, MODOK, races to put an end to Baron Mordo's murderous bid for power. Will MODOK save the day? One thing's for sure, he will live up to his design. Wow, the people who write these fucking plot synopsises. Jesus Christ. Alright, so basically, Baron Mordo organized this whole thing. If he knocked Angela out of the sky, then surely Stephen Strange would come to save her, and then he would kill Stephen Strange, and then he surmised that God Doom would then promote him to be his right hand man, the way Stephen Strange was. He would see his worth.
Because again, the only thing we know how to write Baron Mordo is that he is a perpetual whiny little child who is always jealous of Doctor Strange. Mm. When all else fails, you go with that character. And I just love this line. He's like, really? That's your plan? Because that is the single dumbest thing I have ever heard.
Yeah, MODOK takes the piss out of his plan, which is really funny.
Yeah, what is that? It's like, what if Strange doesn't come? What if Thor killed me instead? I assume you hired the Assassin's Guild. What if they killed me? Do you wish me to go on?
And Baron Mordo's like, shut up! Shut up! and then MODOK, thinking 10 steps ahead, turns the Sentinels from House of M on Baron Mordo like you do. And then Nimrods come out, and wild Sentinels come out, which have guns for faces, which is pretty funny.
It's like one of them has a gun inside its face, and it is adorable.
Angela finally wakes up from her nap. She's got the hammer in hand, and she says, I sentence you to death. And she starts kicking all kinds of Thor ass, and MODOK chops off one of Baron Mordo's arms, and then he makes his then he headbutts him, and he's not dead but unconscious, not killed but defeated.
Poor MODOK has a giant split lip now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that he's actually looking really painful.
He's looking like Alistair Overeem, which means nothing to you, but the MMA fans got that joke. Why have you not killed him? I seriously considered it. Everything in me screamed to kill him. But he must face justice for what he's done, the justice of doom. And Angela's kind of in the background going, I just killed him. Okay. That's the thing with these alternate universe books, is that you can really have fun with these characters and make them do things you can't make them do in the normal continuity because you have to sell more books. But in a limited series like this, which, you know, has no bearing on anything, you can just make the characters do whatever you want. It's fine. Mm-hmm. It's all good. All right, Beta Ray Bill shows up with the rest of the Thors. MODOK finally kills Baron Mordo. His head explodes. It's gross, actually. And MODOK goes in for a little kissy kiss, and she's like, "What are you doing? Are you all right? Is your face having a convulsion?" And he's like, "I would kiss you now." And she says, "Not so much. You presume too much." And of course, like any romance novel, wait, at least tell me your name. And she turns and she says, "My name is Angela." And MODOK, smitten, says, "She smiled at me. Angela smiled at me." And our story ends. So I'll give you my final thoughts here, and then you can have the last word, and we'll get out of here. You know, a book that I decided to do because I wanted something to coincide with the release of MODOK on Hulu, because we're going to be doing Head Games the week that we actually review, and that was written by Patton Oswalt. You know, so again, just trying to find something with the name MODOK on it. It was fine. It was a fun read. I'm not unhappy that I read it. This is definitely... There's been a discussion kind of in the chats about books that are worth reviewing and not worth reviewing. And there's an argument to be made that this really wasn't worth reviewing. But I had fun talking about it. I had fun talking about it with you. This was a... Like I said, not everything needs to be Kingdom Come or, you know, or Jupiter's Legacy or something with a, you know, with a real... with something to say. Sometimes you just want to read a fun book because comics are fun to read. And this fits into that category. I had a good time reading it, and it was a nice little conversation to kind of talk about some of the funny things in the book and tell a few stories. But other than that, it's going to go back on the shelf, and, you know, let us never speak of the shortcut again. Your thoughts, madam?
It is a really fun book. It's very humorous. It's very tongue-in-cheek. The artwork is actually pretty exceptional. I think part of my only complaints was sometimes it was hard to tell which character was which, and I think that only happened whenever Strange and Baron Mordo were on the same page, because I had to keep remembering, okay, Strange doesn't have a goatee. Got it. Because they're drawn almost freaking identical when you see their faces.
Yeah.
But yeah, the artwork is quite good, and like I said before, the lighting effects are really well done. So, you know, this isn't a book that I would say is a must-have for anyone's collection, but it's a fun read. It's very enjoyable, it's very humorous, you know, you just got an hour to kill and you just want to have a good laugh, I'd recommend it.
All right, with that said, we have a very busy day today. Our Jupiter's Legacy episode ran late, so it actually aired late early Friday morning, around the same time as our Damn You Hollywood for Batman v Superman, which we released because it was a Zack Snyder movie, and Zack Snyder released a new movie today, which is Army of the Dead, which will be going up shortly after this. Myself and Robert Winfrey are going to review that. Another movie dropping today is Aquarium of the Dead, for those of you who like the Zombies movies. This is the third part of that trilogy. So there'll be reviews for Army of the Dead later today, and then later tonight, Zombies 1, 2, and Aquarium of the Dead. That's me and Jason Teasley. And you can check out our review of Jupiter's Legacy and Batman v Superman. Plus, we have reviews of Impact Under Siege, WrestleMania Backlash. Jesse dropped an Unspoken Issues for X-Men number 11. Myself and Jesse Starcher reviewed the new Saliva EP, Every 20 Years, which is re-recordings from their Every 6 Seconds album. Plus, we played a bunch of their singles. We had a good time with that. Alexis was on our discussion of Spiral, along with Jason Teasley and Robert Winfrey, if you're into hearing a review of Spiral from the Book of Saw. And we kicked off the week with a review of the book that was adapted into the television show, Volume 1 of Jupiter's Legacy by Mark Miller. That's me and Chris Sheehan. Plus, a re-airing of our Daredevil Season 2 review from back in the Blog Talk Radio days. This weekend, we've got re-airings of Missing in Action, Long Road to Ruin with Pat Mullen, Luke Cage Season 1 review, We'll have a live review of Shadow and Bone Season 1 next week. Myself and Christian will be discussing Man of Steel by Brian Michael Bendis. Myself, Ronnie Adams, and Jesse Startner is threatening to come on. We'll be discussing Invincible Volume 2, 8 is Enough. Robert Winfrey is going to push me in the pool and take over the Metal Hammer of Doom. We are discussing Galactakraken, Starship Velociraptor. Say that three times fast. We'll also be reviewing Castlevania Season 4. Ronnie Adams and I will be reviewing Invincible Season 1. And then we'll be ending the week with myself and Pat Mullen starting up a new book. We are doing The Four Kings of Boxing, Marvin Hagler, Roberto Duran, Sugar Ray Leonard, and the fourth one whose name escapes me right at the moment. Plus, because that is the date of the airing of the Dark Side of the Ring episode of The Ultimate Warrior, Pat and I did... We thought we were going to do more episodes of this, but we ended up only doing the one. We started an Unsolved Mysteries of Wrestling show, and the first episode was The Ultimate Warrior's title run. What, you know, what went wrong, why it went wrong, and how it could have been made better. So that's going to re-air from the archives on May 27th when the Dark Side of the Ring episode airs. Cruella debuts a week from today. Our Flashback Friday episode going along with that is our review of Maleficent from the early days of Damn You Hollywood. And in the evening time, Jeff Slobida had such a good time talking about Stowaway, he's going to come back and do it again. This time, he was brave enough, and he was the only one who was brave enough to review Michael Jordan's Tom Clancy movie, Without Remorse. So, a little late to that. That came out at the end of April, but that's fine. We're going to talk about it next Friday. That's all my plugs. Now Alexis is going to tell you about Tripped Up Trivia and her, you know, and her company where you can buy jewelry, all the fantastic things she does.
That's right. Tripped Up Trivia. We just completed our first episode. It's now up. The theme is sci-fi in honor of May the 4th be with you. We're getting ready to record our second episode here in a few weeks for June. The theme is, drumroll please, female superheroes. And we are still looking for a few contestants. If you think you want to try playing with us, go ahead and hit us up on Facebook or Twitter. It's going to be a lot of fun. Really looking forward to recording our next episode. And, of course, Honeysuckle Rose Creations, the intersection of geek and chic, where fashion meets fandom. We're getting ready for our Memorial Day sale. It's going to start on May 24th and run to the 31st. Everything in both our Etsy and Handmade and Amazon shops will be 15% off. And we will be doing a charity drive at the same time. For every order that is placed, we will be donating $5 to the Veterans Community Fund. This is a charity we've worked with before. So excited to be a part of it. Go ahead and pay attention to our Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter for more information. Again, the sale starts on the 24th of May, and that's everything in the shop. That's all right. I'm sorry. Okay, I'm done.
No, you finish. I thought you were... You took a breath. I thought you were done. Sorry.
I took a breath because I was running out of air.
Apologies, madam. 1,000 pardons.
I was just ending with the sign off. That's Honeysuckle Rose Creations, the intersection of geek and chic. There. Now I'm done.
What are you listening to these days as you craft your fine jewelry? What kind of music are you listening to?
Oh, gee, I've been going back and forth on a couple of different things. Sometimes I like a little jazz, sometimes I like a little rock. I told you before about Fits and the Tantrums and how much I love listening to them.
Mm-hmm. Well, you can find all of that on AmazonMusic.com and get a free 30 days on us if you click our link at getamazonmusic.com/W2M Network. It's right in the description. If you're listening to this on YouTube, you're listening to this on a podcatcher, whether it's Deezer, Podchaser, Spotify, Apple, just look at your phone, goddammit, or your Kindle, or your tablet, and look at the description of our podcast where it says, hey, we're talking about MODOK Assassin. Well, underneath that is the link to AmazonMusic.com, and you can get a free 30 days. If you love it, you keep it. You can make it a part of your online apps and streaming. And if you don't, hey, you got a free 30 days. You can listen to all the music you want. It's a win-win situation for you. I love it. We use it on the Metal Hammer of Doom all the time when we're talking about Saliva or Motley Crue or Weezer or John Cougar Concentration Camp, whatever band we're into that particular week, Galactakraken. It's all there. Whatever weird-ass fucking thing I get pitched, I can usually find it at amazonmusic.com. So go ahead and check it out and get a free 30 days on us. And with that said, I want to thank Alexis Haina for joining me on this extra show this week to talk MODOK Assassin. She will be back, because we all love Alexis Haina and we enjoy hearing her talk about comics, so she'll be back in 2 weeks. We will be talking Disney Great Parodies Volume 1, Mickey's Inferno. Because, really, when you're thinking about Dante's Inferno, you're thinking about Walt Disney World. Wouldn't you say?
You ever stood in line for the teacups?
That is definitely one of the circles of hell. And on that note, be well, be safe, and behave.